temptation, promiscuity, marriage, homosexuality. These are some of the issues addressed in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, Sexual Morality in a Christless World. You can read an excerpt at issuesetc.org or find out more by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Learn the truth about sexual morality from a reasoned, Christian perspective with the Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Sexual Morality in a Christless World.
The replacement of our beloved Justice Scalia will be a person of similar views, principles, and judicial philosophies. Very important. This will be one of the most important issues decided by this election. I would like to thank the evangelical and religious community because I'll tell you what, the support that they've given me, and I'm not sure I totally deserve it, has been so amazing and has had such a big reason for me being here tonight. True. So true. They have much to contribute to our politics, yet our laws prevent you from speaking your minds from your own pulpits. An amendment pushed by Lyndon Johnson many years ago threatens religious institutions with a loss of their tax-exempt status if they openly advocate their political views. Their voice has been taken away. I am going to work very hard to repeal that language and to protect free speech for all Americans.
That's Donald Trump speaking Thursday night at the GOP convention in Cleveland. A small piece of what turned out to be over an hour-long speech. He dealt with a lot of issues. He laid out his plan. It basically comes to, looks like everything's broken, and I am the man to fix it. Welcome back to Issues Etc. on this Sunday night, July the 24th. We're going to talk about the GOP convention. Joining us, Mark Hemingway. He's senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be back.
And Molly Hemingway, senior editor for The Federalist. Molly, welcome.
Great to be here with you.
Molly, let's go with you first. Your general impression of Donald Trump's speech last night at the final night of the GOP convention?
Well, I was glad I got to read the speech before he delivered it. I thought that he makes a really, I thought the speech did a good job of explaining who he is as a candidate. He is the candidate for people who are simply fed up with the way things are going and who have a lot of fear about security, be that related to national security, border security, law and order security, or job security. These are all things that are concerns to people, and he said that he will take these issues seriously and he won't speak in a weird way about them like so many of our political leaders do. It was also a really negative speech by virtue of that being his campaign approach. And it was interesting that it laid out all of these negative things about the country without too much positive stuff. So that made it a somewhat unique speech in that usually you use a little bit of the fear, tapping into people's fear, and also a little bit more hope or a recursion to first principles, which in America tends to be a very important thing in political rhetoric, to go to first principles. Not a lot of that.
Mark, what were the highlights and the lowlights of Donald Trump's speech?
Well, Molly's, right about the, I agree with her, in terms of what she was saying about there wasn't a lot of positive things to say about America. But having said that, that Nixonian sort of appeal to law and order that Trump did repeatedly throughout the speech, I think that political observers underestimate the appeal of that at their peril. I mean, I think that people really do feel a lot of anxiety about what's going on in America at the moment. And, he spoke very directly to that in the way that I haven't seen, you know, any other politician on the scene do. So, I mean, I think on some level that was good, even if it did involve a bit of fear-mongering. But, you know, other than that, it's like what Molly said. I mean, it just there was not a lot of positive messages about America or, you know, why America is good or even what are the good things about America we've lost.
One thing that I think was really savvy about that is it makes it very difficult for Hillary Clinton to have an effective counter to this type of speech. Basically, I think there are all these things you see among the media or other political observers who think that she should come out and be very sunny and bright as a way of countering Donald Trump. That effectively makes it not much of a case for voting for her. She won't have an easy time making a case for voting for her if she has to come out and say everything is great. Particularly in Democratic politics, a lot of it is about whipping up people into, anger about injustice or whatnot. And so if she comes out and says everything's great and Donald Trump is wrong, she's not going to have much excitement surrounding her campaign. So it was actually a pretty effective approach, I think.
So one of the more interesting things about the speech is that there was almost no, like, ideological conservatism in it. And this is just it's sort of an aside issue, but Ivanka speech introducing him last night was kind of an amazing thing to hear at a Republican convention because it could have been delivered word for word in Philadelphia next week. I mean, it was all female identity politics and, just this weird sort of, you know, rank populism that Trump specializes in. And her father, you know, didn't come on the stage and really, offer any sort of, you know, distinctly ideological conservatism that's been a hallmark of Republican politics since, you know, Goldwater. So, I mean, that was a really marked shift in the Republican Party, for sure.
If I were to say that the outline of the speech that I heard last night was, in essence, everything is broken, and I, Donald Trump, am the only person smart enough and capable enough to fix it, and I will, would I be oversimplifying the speech, Molly?
Not at all. That's a very good way of putting it. One interesting thing, though, was that among the things that were broken, he really didn't talk much about the actual culture, which would be a more traditional Republican approach, would be to say that there's more to life than your job or whatnot, that there's a moral component to it, and we need to be a moral people. There was basically very little mention of those culture issues. And also an earlier speaker, Peter Thiel, got up and said that basically culture wars were stupid. And if you cared about protecting women's only bathrooms, you were an idiot. And then this speech came out. There was no mention of like unborn children or anything like that. So it was a really sort of hostile to social conservatives type evening. But among the things that he said were broken, he didn't really put the moral component in there. It was interesting.
So, Mark, I think I heard less talk, not only from Trump, but also from the entire GOP convention through the week. I heard less talk about life, natural marriage, and religious liberty. Molly just mentioned those things, than previous GOP conventions in my lifetime. How are they going to convince me that a Trump presidency is going to deal with these issues?
Well, and that's a really good question, as we've discussed many times in this program before, that, you know, the biggest pocket of resistance to Trump are in fact, you know, devout weekly churchgoers, and almost nothing at that speech is really trying to reach them. I mean, I thought actually one of the best moments in the speech last night was when Trump, you mentioned that he had all this support from evangelicals and religious leaders, and then he made that aside, and I think it was off script, about how he wasn't sure that he deserved it, you know, and that was actually one of his few, like, really self-aware things I've seen Trump do, and I thought was sort of positive. And he did talk about religious liberty in his speech last night. I just thought he made kind of a hash of the issue because he talked about, you know, the freedom to, you know, say whatever you want from the pulpit, which, you know, on the scale of things that we're concerned about with religious liberty right now, that is not really near the top of the list. I mean, we're much more worried about being able to operate in the public square, you know, as individuals and business owners and things like that. And to focus on that one, you know, narrow issue really sort of suggests that Trump and his people don't understand the issue and why it's important right now.
Well, I think also, though, they have a problem in that they're affiliated with people who are very bad on religious liberty, or if you were to talk about, you know, one of the big issues would be protections for people who are at odds with the sexual revolution. But Mike Pence at first, you know, was supportive of a bill to protect those freedoms in Indiana before caving and actually making religious liberty far worse, particularly for Christians in that state, on the issue of coming into conflict with, if your values are in conflict with the new sexual orthodoxy. So he can't really talk about religious freedom legislation. And Peter Thiel just said that you're an idiot if you care about some of these other issues. So he wanted to talk about religious liberty, which I think is a good instinct. And he wanted to say, I appreciate that you supported me, but he didn't have too much to work with. So he chose this pulpit freedom issue, which is that it is a bad law, which is saying that you can't endorse candidates from the pulpit. You can talk about issues. You can even talk about legislation, but you can support legislation or oppose legislation, but you can't endorse a candidate. That there's no reason why we should have a law like this on our books, and it's a, even though it's not enforced, it's a threat and it's a chilling of expression. I don't actually advocate ministers of the gospel endorsing candidates from the pulpit, but that is not up to the government to decide. So it is, you know, it is a good thing to be against, and it does, I guess, suggest good instincts, and that there is at least some part of the campaign that has an ear for people concerned about religious liberty.
Molly Hemingway is our guest, senior editor for The Federalist, along with her husband, Mark Hemingway, senior writer for The Weekly Standard. We're talking about the GOP convention. When we come back, I want to return to something Mark mentioned before, that little phrase that Donald Trump used, I'm not sure I totally deserve it, when he was talking about evangelical support. We're not used to hearing politicians say that they don't deserve our support, or that they may not deserve our support. They usually are there telling us over and over again, I deserve your support. I deserve your support. Now, that might have been on script or off script. I don't know. But it was aimed right at the heart of evangelical sensibilities. I wonder if they got it. We'll be right back.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
1 hour from now, live on this 22nd of July, this Friday afternoon, we've got Issues, Etc. Soundbite of the Week. Soundbites on the feminist version of history, on the GOP convention benediction, on selective outrage and racism, and on why Christians need the law. That's 1 hour from now. Issues, Etc. Soundbite of the Week. You can vote in advance. 1-877-623-MYIE via email, talkback@issuesetc.org. You can send us a tweet at @issuesetc or vote at our Facebook fan page, Facebook.com/issuesetc.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, engages young adults in a Christ-centered environment, delivering academic excellence and spiritual growth to develop Christian leaders for tomorrow. We provide a Christ-focused alternative to public high schools. Many of our students receive tuition assistance. To help us provide tuition assistance to more students, go to melhs.org and click on the giving page, or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
Are you tired of working nights, weekends, and odd hours trying to cover your bases at home just to make ends meet? At the Cleaning Authority, we call that the multi-job shuffle, and we want to end that for you right now. We'll train you in our proven, efficient cleaning methods, and you'll be partnered to work in pre-qualified homes. Call 314-416-8117 and walk away from the multi-job shuffle with a future in our St. Louis office, 314-416-8117.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the recently concluded Republican National Convention with Mark Hemingway, senior writer for The Weekly Standard, and Molly Hemingway, senior editor for The Federalist. Molly, I want to come back to something that Mark had mentioned before the break, and that was this line that Donald Trump used when he was describing the evangelical support that he has. We're used to politicians saying, I deserve your support, but he said, I'm not sure I totally deserve it. That seemed aimed at the sensibilities of evangelicals. What are your thoughts there?
Well, it was a, I don't know if it was scripted to come off like it was an ad lib or if it was an ad lib. If it was a Freudian slip, I don't know, but it did come off as a genuine moment of humility. Now, Donald Trump is very good at conveying impressions and getting people to feel certain things about him. So I think he understands that this convention was rough for people who are more principled on social conservative issues. And there was the amazing moment when Ted Cruz basically called out people who had supported Donald Trump over Republican virtues and principles. And he did this thing where he went back and talked about the founding of the country and the founding of the party and what values are important to people who are conservative. And it was a really, it was a striking contrast to this sort of thuggish, brutish rhetoric that's coming not just from Trump, but a lot of his supporters, which is just this not very much talking about principles so much as pragmatism, force. And so I think he probably sensed, he's very good at sensing when he's losing support or when things are problematic. And I think maybe he sensed that he should shore up that evangelical support. My own thinking, though, is they've been fairly cheap dates. They've been willing to trust him without much reason to trust him. And they are, a lot of them are enthusiastic supporters. And so I think, maybe there are still Christians who are deeply discouraged by Trump's rhetoric and policy positions. But it turns out that a lot of evangelicals are really not maybe as principled as you might have thought.
Mark, Molly mentions Ted Cruz. He made a speech, did not endorse Donald Trump in his speech. I'm reading two different things. He ended his political career or he relaunched it. Which happened?
Well, what's happening here is that Ted Cruz is making a gamble, which is that, Donald Trump is going to lose and lose possibly big in November. And if that's the case, then, I think Ted Cruz will be very well positioned as the guy that came out of this convention and did this thing where he, said basically, I told you so months ahead of time. Obviously, if Trump wins or the election is exceptionally close or any number of developments could happen where that would negate Cruz's strategy. But I think that's the bet that Cruz is making. But I don't know. One thing I think that people don't quite get about Cruz's speech was that it was a real impressive act of political courage. But at the same time, it was also self-serving. And those things aren't necessarily contradictory. In an ideal world, politicians' self-interest would be aligned with principle, and this was a rare moment where I think that was the case. Having said that, Cruz is an interesting figure. He's not exactly well-liked by his colleagues in the Senate. In fact, reported earlier this week that as Mike Lee, who led the delegate revolt against Trump at the beginning of the week, that was quashed in a rather transparently corrupt fashion, heading into the convention, Ted Cruz wasn't returning Mike Lee's phone calls, because I presume that he was trying to get Cruz to help out in the effort to rebel against Trump on the floor at the convention. And Cruz didn't do that, but he did show up and deliver this, barn burner of a speech at the convention, which was a big rallying cry for people that are, upset about what Trump is doing to the party. But it'll be interesting going forward to see whether or not Cruz unites the party and the faction of the party that is specifically against Trump, or, he goes forward with a very calculated, self-serving political plan.
Molly, Ted Cruz's position here then is, I congratulate Donald Trump on having come this far, but you're not going to hear me say you should vote for him. Is that a good outline of his speech?
No, I think his speech was, we are being conned by someone who you may need to vote for. You might want to vote for him, you might not. But what's more important than that is that we have a party to carry forth these principles after this happens, after whatever happens here happens. He was not speaking to the convention floor so much as all Americans. He was talking about the virtues or the values that the Republican Party has, which were not on display at this convention. And that's not totally out of character for a convention, in that usually what you do in a convention is you take the message, you're now unified behind one person, and you try and broaden that message to have broader appeal beyond your own party. This was just a very weird, kind of poorly designed convention, in that I think people expected Trump's to be much better at the entertainment value and whatnot. Had a ton of interesting speeches, but it wasn't so much about broadening the vote, and it also wasn't about reinforcing Republican principles or portraying them as things that everybody would want to be a part of, because they didn't really talk that much about principle. Ted Cruz talked about the Constitution. He talked about why the Republican Party started, how it started to abolish slavery, how its greatest acts have been about preserving the dignity and equality of men and women, and explaining that these principles are important and need a party to carry them forth. I know that he personally thought that it was a huge risk to his political career, but that he felt he had to do it. But I don't think he actually wanted the big thing to be that he wasn't endorsing. I think he wanted the big thing to be, we need to be people of conscience and we need to be good Americans. And it was just, he was doing something completely different than what everybody else at the convention was doing.
Mark, what did you make of Marco Rubio's short recorded video?
You know, again, it's just another one of these things that speaks to what's happening to the party itself, and the fact that a lot of Republicans, again, are making this calculation that Trump is not going to win in November. I mean, you know, Rubio did, you know, endorse Trump, but he didn't show up at the convention. He delivered a short video address, you know, from somewhere else. You know, he just didn't make his presence, you know, behind Trump be felt. You know, he just showed up to be, you know, a loyal member of the party, no more, no less. And, you know, leave it at that. But, you know, I think on some level, you know, obviously there are ideological distinctions about in between people like Cruz and Rubio. But Cruz and Rubio are both guys that are, you know, very much in the traditional mold of Republican candidates, Republican politicians, whereas Trump is just something altogether, you know. And I think that there's a recognition there among people that have been active in the GOP at the, as politicians for a long time, that are a bit puzzled and or, you know, frustrated with what's going on, because Trump is bending the entire party to his will. And as, you know, Cruz pointed out in his speech, you know, we are a party that collectively stands for something. You know, the candidates should reflect that, you know, that that's the reason why they should be part of the party, instead of everybody changing everything about the party to accommodate the guy at the top. It's literally the opposite of Republican values as we've known them since, you know, the 1850s or 60s, whenever the party was founded.
Molly, let's talk a little bit about next week. What will be the theme of the Democratic convention?
Well, I think it'll be interesting to see which approach the Democratic Party takes. Are they going to try and broaden their vote, or are they going to try and fire up their base? Democrats also had a very contentious primary, very divisive. People are still not totally healed. I think people are waiting to see who the vice presidential pick will be, which is going to be today. We're going to find out who that is. Is it going to be someone like Tim Kaine? Well, he is a very moderate Democrat, by which I mean he personally opposes abortion but would never do anything to restrict the right to kill unborn children. So that's what passes for a moderate in the Democratic Party. And that will enrage some people if she does pick someone like that. Or will she pick someone more exciting, someone to bring pizzazz to the ticket? Will she, you know, she could throw a curveball and pick a Republican. I think a lot will depend. You'll know a lot about what they're trying to do when they put this forward. But the convention 4 years ago was pretty shrill and extreme. I mean, there were multiple nights devoted to supporting the right to kill unborn children. It was the main messaging of the campaign. It was the war on women. And it was pretty in-your-face, offensive type stuff, mixed with, of course, Hollywood glamour, because Democrats tend to have higher ranking celebrities involved with their campaigns than Republicans do. The Republican convention, you had like a mixed martial arts fighter. At the Democratic convention, you will have maybe more politically activist celebrities, but people like Lena Dunham, you know, who can be a turnoff to people, but very exciting to the young female millennial crowd. So I think you'll see a much sort of more smoothly produced and polished convention. But I don't know if this is the year that people want that.
Mark, in a similar vein, what does Hillary Clinton need to say next week in order to respond to what Donald Trump laid out last night?
Well, I think, you know, as Trump spoke to the fears America have about the breakdown of law and order, Hillary Clinton's got to address that issue from the left, because there's been a lot of concern, obviously, about these videos of police shooting unarmed men. And there's a lot of anxiety about, you know, racial tensions in this country on the left and racial equality. And so, you know, she's got to find a way that, you know, she can address that without also, you know, alienating the sense that we need law and order. I think a lot of independents and, you know, maybe even Republicans that she's targeting. But I also think that Hillary Clinton has to do one key thing here, which is that, you know, this is a general election now. It's won by winning independents. And she was dragged much further left than I think she would have liked to have been in the primary, because Sanders, her primary opponent, is a socialist, and the core Democratic activists are getting really far left these days. So the Clintons like to triangulate. They've always been centrist Democrats, so I think it'll be interesting to see what Hillary Clinton does to moderate her message so she looks less left than she did in the primary and appeals to a broader range of voters in the general election.
You can follow Mark Hemingway on Twitter at Heminator, that's at Heminator, and you can follow Molly on Twitter at MZ Hemingway. Mark Hemingway is senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, thanks for being our guest.
Thanks again.
Molly Hemingway is senior editor for The Federalist. Molly, thank you.
Thank you.
You can listen to our weekly updates on the November elections with Mark and Molly Hemingway live and on demand at issuesetc.org and on the Lutheran Public Radio mobile app. When we come back, we'll talk about the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod and female draft registration with Dr. Corey Moss, author of a Wall Street Journal piece, Lutherans Arm Up to Defend Women.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Conservative versus radical, two extremes which offer us a window into considering the future of Lutheranism as well.
Dr. Larry Rast speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
For there is a place for the confessional witness Lutherans have to offer in the places in which we find ourselves today, but that witness will only be faithful if it conserves the insights of the Reformation. And that conservation, I believe, is needed today more than ever.
You can listen to Dr. Rath's presentation, Making the Case for the Conservative Reformation, and teachings by Chris Roseborough, Carl Fakencher, Adrian Dorr-Heinz, Brian Wolfmiller, and Jonathan Fisk on an audio DVD from the Making the Case conference. We'll send it to you for a donation of $300 to Issues Etc. For more information, look for the DVD logo at issuesetc.org.